We are moving on now to agenda paper number 14, determination of the discount rate.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Agenda paper 14 is about the determination of the discount rate for post-employment benefit obligations. In the January meeting, in the January meeting, the committee asked the staff to consult with the board on the four matters listed in paragraph 3B of the paper. The scope of this paper is to report to the committee the results of the consultation and to illustrate our proposed next step on this issue. The results of the consultation with the board are in paragraph 6 of the paper. Our intention is to bring to the next committee meeting a narrow scope amendment to AS19 that reflect the indication provided by the board. We think that in the draft amendment, we should also clarify that for liability expressed in euros, the deepness of the market should be assessed at eurozone level. We also think that we should provide guidance for determining the discount rate when there is no deep market for high-quality corporate bonds and when the government bonds are not high quality. Our preliminary view is that in this situation, an entity should use the government bonds and adjust the yield of these bonds, removing the market premium for the additional credit risk. In other words, the entity should construct a synthetic yield curve. We are asking the committee if they have any comments or suggestion on our proposed next steps. Thank you.
Michael?
Yeah, just this was one of the other issues that the Global Preparers Forum discussed yesterday. The one comment they had was just about the timing of anything that is produced in association with this project to be thinking about the impact on interim reporting that they might have, or the effect on year-end reporting having already reported at an interim period. I just sort of lay that one out that there. Obviously, it's something that does affect pretty much everything that we do, and we should be, and the board should be conscious of the impact of timing.
Marant?
Okay, on the first proposal to have a narrow scope amendment to explain that high-quality corporate bonds are equivalent to corporate bonds with minimal or very low credit risks, I'm already starting to receive questions, but what does this mean? Does it mean double A-rated bonds or above? So I recall from your last paper that effectively there was some guidance to say that minimal or very low credit risks would be similar to the two highest ratings from internationally recognized agencies or something like that. Well, I think that they would need some guidance, because if you just put very low, minimal credit risk, people will ask what it means. My second point relates to what do you do when you don't have high-quality government bonds, and you propose to create a synthetic yield curve. My recollection of previous discussions is that creation of synthetic yield curves was always rejected, because otherwise we could construct synthetic yield curves to make high-quality corporate bonds, and this was rejected. So I have now difficulty to go along that route, in addition to the practical difficulties of removing what would be the market premium for the additional credit risks in determining government bonds. And to that fact as well, I have received also feedback from other countries where it was a no deep market for high quality corporate bonds, so you have to go for government bonds, and the government bonds were supposed to be high quality, except that the rate, the government bond rate, was influenced by things such as the fact that it is a safe harbor. So the rate is very low, and so they are now asking, even if we are considered high quality, should I adjust my very low government bond rate, because there are some elements into it that do not just reflect the time value of money and reflect an element that is of a safe harbor. So thereby going back to constructing a synthetic yield curve and so on. So I'm very nervous about those proposals moving forward and the proposing creation of synthetic yield curves. If we go along that route for government bonds, then I think we should allow it for determining the discount rate in other circumstances.
Isn't the premium for safe harbor to a degree also present in AAA corporates?
Corporates are very few AAA corporates so far.
I think, just as a little bit of additional background, not arguing either side, the board's concern was that to a degree there are a couple of problems in 19. The general principle is in paragraph 84. The thing that to a degree modifies the general principle is in paragraph 83, which is an odd way to sequence the discussion. The second thing that I'd ask either Weiguo or Patricia to expand on this if they'd like to. The other thing that was of concern to board members is that that means that to a degree IAS 19 is a clockwork standard. And the clock breaks, in their view, when you have a government bond that is essentially triple X rated. And so your objective was stated to be one thing, your implementation was stated to be the other thing, and the automatic reversion to a government bond rate could put you in the position of actually accepting a very low credit rating as the basis for your discount rate, and I do think that the board found that unacceptable. Patricia is nodding her head.
They found it acceptable?
Unacceptable. Okay. Unacceptable. With that background, John?
I mean, to some extent, we'll have to see where the project goes when it starts to explore these issues. I have some similar concerns as Laurence about the creation of synthetic curve for government bonds that might be junk, because I'm not sure where you would start, given the currency of the obligations that you're actually trying to discount. I mean, it might be in the Eurozone, it might be different because governments may not have the ability to print money to settle obligations, but in many countries where there is the government has the sovereign power to print its currency, then the discount rate for that government, I don't know how you would start to create some form of synthetic or hypothetical government bond rate for a country that has its own currency, and you're measuring an obligation in that particular currency. Would you sort of try to determine some ultimate discount rate, or I'm not quite sure where you would go. I mean, what do you want to use as a benchmark for developing a synthetic discount rate? I think the flow-on effect is if a synthetic discount rate is okay in that situation, then why not where there's not a deep market in corporate bonds? So why not do away with the distinction between corporate bonds and government bonds and just determine a synthetic rate based upon some principles? And also, if you have government bonds that are too high quality, in other words, they're a safe harbor, should you be adjusting those because they actually contain something else other than the discount rate we're trying to determine for measuring the obligation? So I think this is opening up a huge array of conceptual questions about the discount rate, and I'm not quite sure how the mechanics of developing this synthetic rate, where it will lead us. So I'm just concerned.
Do you have a plan B?
Well, my plan B would be to use the government bond rate, whatever that government bond rate is, where that
17%. Okay, Scott. I
mean, that should be reflected in the currency. That should be reflected in the currency in terms of you're estimating your obligation way out in the future. If your obligation is in currency units of such a country, then I think you're discounting appropriately. So,
Scott.
I have the same comment as Laurence, minimal or very low credit risk. I'm not sure what that means. It also seems to be a choice. You can choose bonds with minimal credit risk or very low credit risk. Apparently those are different, but I don't know what the difference is, and I don't know how much credit risk is still minimal or very low. So I don't think it advances the ball. We would still be left with the question of, well, does that mean AA or does that mean something else? The last time we discussed this, we were talking about trying to get something into whatever we put out that says the fact that there aren't as many bonds being traded as there used to be doesn't mean you now bring in bonds with more credit risk than you previously thought was appropriate. I thought that was at least a good way to start, to make sure that we didn't have kind of the incorporation of more credit risk so that I can get a pool of bonds the size that I would like. So thought we should try to bring back that idea, even if we don't want to say anything more about what minimal credit risk is. Then flipping to the government bond issue, to some extent I agree with John. If the government actually can print money, then the discount rate on government bonds, or the interest rate on government bonds, is probably just inflation. And we probably wouldn't want to discount the pension liability at less than the inflation rate. I think we probably need to take that into account. On the other hand, I could see the situation developing in the U.S. because of political gridlock, that even though we have the right to print money, we just refuse to do it. and I think Standard & Poor's at least has recognized that as a possibility, and that's why the U.S. is not AAA on Standard & Poor's anymore. It's not that the U.S. doesn't have the right to print money, it's that politicians may just simply refuse to do it and decide not to pay off the debts. So I have trouble thinking about what to do on the government bond fallback. Clearly, when the government doesn't have the right to print money, I can get leery of falling back to government bonds real quick. Even when they do have the right to print money, there may be something in that rate that reflects political gridlock or irresponsibility rather than lack of ability to pay. And in that case, I wouldn't want to fall back on the government rate as well. So I understand the desire to move away from the government rate if some of this other stuff is in there, but constructing the synthetic yield curve that would apply if there wasn't political gridlock seems to be a Herculean task. I'm not sure I know how to do that. And so because of that, I'm a little bit nervous about opening the door to synthetic yield curves. And I don't have a plan B.
Guido?
Well, maybe we should actually ask some people that are smarter than us if they could come up with a different approach, because I think the approach in IS 19, looking at high quality corporate bonds and then at high quality or not high quality government bonds, is broken. I mean, I certainly think that some years ago, a AAA government bond, if I take some German bonds at that time, you still got, even though it was high quality, AAA 3.5%. Now you have negative interest rates sometimes. And that's only because in relation to other investment opportunities, it's a safe harbor. And that might also be the case for AAA corporate bonds. So are we talking about absolute high quality? Then I would have to take that into account. I would have to add something to this negative interest rates if I would take German Bunds, for instance. Or is it relative high quality, which I don't think is the right answer. So I don't want to go too much into details because everybody else already talked about the problems that we have with what is in the standard right now. And I don't know whether maybe other people could come up with something that makes the accounting for pension liabilities, which is a very important issue for a lot of companies, more comparable around the globe, because now more than 100 countries, as I heard, are applying IFRS. So I can't see that in one country you are using 3.0, 2.9% discount rate, in other countries 6% or 7%. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't have a plan B in that sense, but maybe one could ask actuarians or others whether they could come up with something else, because I think I see what the staff is trying to achieve here, and I see that the board says, well, let's look at high quality, which is a minimum or risk-free, and my understanding is that they took this notion from one of the rating agencies. I think it was Moody's. They use these words for AAA and AA. It doesn't help a lot. I mean, then we should say use AA. We think it should be AA. I don't think it's the right answer, but so that doesn't really help. So dancing around the fire, I think at the end of the day, we should give it a try and come up with a different definition of what the discount rate should look like. I'm not referring to government or corporate bonds. Whether that fits into a narrow scope amendment is the next question. I was still struggling with what we proposed here for the government bonds, because I know that around the globe, a lot of companies fall back to the government bonds. In Asia, in South America, and other parts of the world, in Africa. If we tell them you have to fall back on, not on the government bonds yields itself, but you have to use a synthetic yield curve, that would be a huge change for them to do. So being conscious that this is an issue, which is an urgent issue, as the preparers told us, my only recommendation would be, unless the academics have an answer, I will not spend more time on this.
Bart,
you have an answer.
You have an answer?
Yeah, I have a very simple answer. I suggest make it part of an annual improvement to yearly state a number.
This year, 5.2%.
Yeah, I'm serious. I mean, we're talking about two ends of the scale. We have, as Guido said, we have the German government bonds at a negative interest rate, which makes it very difficult for some companies using that because, you know, they end up with no equity. Or even the high-quality corporate bonds are traded at very low interest rates. On the other hand, you have corporate government bonds at 25 or even more percent, which is the other end of the scale. And in both cases, you have two parts of the interest rate, as we know. You have the time value of money, which is obviously intended to be what should be in the discount rate, meaning risk-free, and you have the risk component. And the risk component, in the case of the German government bonds, makes them negative, the interest rate. It's not the time value of money, it's the risk component, because obviously we have inflation. So within a certain market, you have various interest rates, and therefore I think it would be quite easy, and maybe we should really ask our constituents, do you think that just giving them a number every year and varying it by 0.2-0.5% is feasible? I think it makes a lot of people's lives very easy. On the other hand, I think it's if we don't want to do that, because obviously it has some downsides from the principle-based point of view. if we do not want to do that, I think the approach taken is okay. I think, as Guido said, minimal or very low credit risk does not give rise to much doubt, because that's exactly taken from, I think it was Moody's or S&P. It's AAA and AA. So it wouldn't give you much room for maneuver. And I would just add that we should somehow incorporate that you look at a certain basket of high quality corporate bonds, so that you're not looking at one single bond or one single government bond, but at a basket of them within one currency zone. Because we had that question as well: do you have to look at the whole eurozone or only individual bonds? So we should incorporate that. But I'm in favor of picking a number.
Peggy?
I really can't think of a very easy solution, because it's a very pervasive issue, and it's a pervasive issue not just, say, by looking at government bonds versus corporate bonds, but even if you look at the discount rates that companies are using, they vary by extremes. And the fact that our pool of AAA and AA bonds is narrowing greatly, you can have tremendous fluctuations then in valuations as a result. And so to be dependent on a couple of key companies, to, you know, for many, many other companies, be setting the liabilities doesn't seem right anymore. And so I'm really at a loss for coming up with something that would be fair. I don't agree with going with the number, although it's a nice, easy answer. I think that would be very difficult to apply in practice around the world. But it's easy to apply, but if we can't even come up with what's AA and AAA and appropriate government bond, I can't imagine how long we'd spend trying to agree on the number every year that we'd use, the discount rate. So perhaps going back and asking some actuaries, as Guido said, I'm not really sure what to do, but it is a big problem, and it's only going to get worse.
Charlotte?
I agree with moving the automatic fallback to government bonds. I think that is an improvement. I'm still concerned that we still haven't really stated what the objective of the discount rate is, and maybe by stating what it's supposed to represent, then you enable people to use their own judgment more as to what number they're trying to get to. I think that might help. At the moment, we seem to have got a hierarchy. And so you go from high quality bond, or sorry, minimum or low credit rating bonds, all the way through to the yield curve. I don't think the minimum or low credit, I don't think that does anything different to using high quality bonds. I think it's the same problem. Is it relative or is it absolute? And moving to the yield curve, I think if you're going to go to a synthetic yield curve approach, you can't just use government bonds. You have to use all the available information that's out there, including high quality and government, and adjust appropriately. And then that way you get the range that's included, you know, the range of things that are available, and you don't have necessarily that the problem that Guido referred to, where you're dependent on, you know, one set of government bonds.
Sandy?
I walked away from the conversation in January with thoughts similar to what John expressed about, I felt the need that we needed some capital markets expertise, or if that's actuarial expertise, that's actuarial expertise. But I didn't think the construction of the synthetic and the way it was articulated, i.e. related to the insurance project, as I thought more about it, was actually, I didn't think that method in the insurance project was meant for situations where something wasn't observable. So I wasn't certain that was exactly the same. I wouldn't support using one rate, mandating rate. But it seems to me, as Charlotte said, it would be useful to have all of the information in a particular market so you could understand exactly. I mean, it's not that just we're struggling to measure this liability, but assets are really being priced in those marketplaces with these being risk-free rates as they were, or extremely risk-free rates or extremely risky rates. So to me, it seems that we need to consult with people who have capital markets expertise. But I think this also raises a very interesting question about, I mean, when users were asked about what the number one projects were for the agenda consultation behind financial statement presentation and OCI was discount rate. because they don't know what the conceptual underpinnings are for how these things are arrived across many different liabilities. But it seems to me that this is an opportunity to explore it further, but I sort of feel like as accountants, we may have tapped our knowledge expertise, that we need capital markets or actuarial expertise in assessing, in fact, how you come up with these rates, because people are pricing assets.
Don, and I did not introduce Don at the beginning of the meeting, which was rude of me. Don is here in the seat from representing the commission.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
Please.
Do I have to press it now?
No, it's your step now.
Okay, thank you. Actually, I just wanted to echo something that was said earlier, so not anything very original, but in the briefing for the meeting, I was asked just to reiterate the point that when the IFRIC considered this in June 2005 and in the rejection notice, they did specifically make this point about being able to look at regional markets and, perhaps baskets of Eurozone bonds or something like that. So I was asked if I could remind the committee of that and ask if that could be considered as part of the deliberations on the project. Thanks.
Joanna?
I'm going to come back to a comment that you said right at the start, which was when you talked to the ISB about this and that talking about the fact that paragraphs 84 and 83 are arguably the wrong way around. And that 84 is the principle in terms, and this is in some ways relates to what Charlotte and Sandy were saying, that, and I wonder whether we are getting too bogged down, and maybe because I don't apply this practically as much as everybody else, around high quality corporate bonds and AA and AAA and all of the rest of it, but come back to the principle and say, what is the principle, what 84 says reflects the time value of money but not the actuarial or investment risk, and the ISB confirmed, or said, whether or not confirmed is the right thing because I'm not sure we said this, that that does not mean that it is the risk-free rate, but taking that into account and saying, okay, it's not the risk-free rate, then to me, absolutely every country should have a different rate, because the risks, as Bernd or Guido said, are actually different in each country. So to actually say to have a fixed rate around the world, I actually think would be totally wrong, because I actually think that the different current, and it specifically talks about the currencies, do have different aspects, so should be considered. So I wonder, rather than us fixating on what we have been doing and paragraph 83, as to whether this is the opportunity to use paragraph 84, the principles, and then say what should we be using. And I come back to John's almost very, very first comment going around the room and actually saying, isn't actually the government bond rate in the currency in which we are dealing and trying to work out the liability probably the closest to effectively what that principle is? As opposed to I'm not advocating that, and maybe it is actually coming back and saying getting further expertise, but to me, we absolutely should be focusing on the principle rather than trying to fix, is it AA, AAA, or bond rate, or synthetic yield curve, or whatever it may be. It's the principle, and what is the right answer?
A couple of observations before I bring in the last couple of people, because I'm not sure we can go much farther at this point. John's point about the government rate probably incorporating inflation and therefore being consistent with the salary progressions, I think is a good one. It's the old principle of your cash flow and your discount rate assumptions ought to be consistent with one another. And I think that's an important point for us to focus on. I spoke at length with Peter Clark, who was the author of 19 and of its basis, and he confirmed a couple of things for me, that most of the debate at the old IASC was around whether or not the discount rate should reflect the particular assets in which the plan was invested, which was a similar argument to the one the FASB had when it did FAS 87, and the IASC said no, and then kind of stopped. I'm not averse to getting some of the actuaries involved. There's an actuarial educational study on the use of discounting and financial reporting that's quite good. A little thick, deep, but I think quite good. And I have no problem with the staff reaching out and seeing if we can gain some insights there before we decide where to take it. I would also say that if the staff concludes that we've got to do this through fundamental thinking about discount rates, then it doesn't belong here. It belongs in the broad research project on discounting. And we'll just have to muddle through in the meantime with the best we can do here. But that would be kind of the way I would lay it out. Is step one is we will reach out. I'm not sure who I'd talk to in capital markets, Sandy. I think I'd probably start with the actuaries, because I know a few of them have done a lot of crossover thinking to asset pricing and some of those things. Having said that, Laurence and Peggy, and then we'll wrap it up. Wego, board member preference. You go ahead.
You know, the current situation seems quite awkward, and in some jurisdictions, the government bond rate is so high, but reported pension liability would be very lower. And report from when is also right, you know, board member generally, you know, support to do something. But I personally be relatively cautious about this. I'm not sure how the discussion between the staff with the original pension staff. And my memory is when the board revised the 19, we went separately exposed on a discount rate. And the idea is to propose a principle. But by the end, board not successfully finalized and back to the current requirement. So the key is, should we consider 84 as a principle or objective? If that is the case, it looks like quite awkward. Normally we put principles up front rather than put principles downward. And as I understand, during that time, board not able to finalize the objective or principles. The main, as I recall, the main opposition are three. First one is people feel hard to reach agreement on, you know, the principle. You know, what's the what kind of appropriate rate should be, and secondly, you know, the about synthetic. You know, if you have principle, means, you know, the rules should not be high corporate bonds or government bonds. You can use anyone. So then come out synthetic, the rate type of notion. Then many jurisdictions and practitioners said, how can we do? You know, because we have to follow the principle. And certainly, as I remember, the Big Four firm, or accounting firm worried very much, you know. Now you have simple rate, you know. Even though not approved it, it is auditable, but everybody wants to get something which looks like reasonable. How can we audit? So the board finally are not able to reach conclusions and suspend. Then come out 83, 84. So 84 become something which looks like a principle. I don't think it is a principle. And then 83 become rules. And if you choose between them. And so this, I just want to tell you my memories, you know.
That's a dog's breakfast.
Okay, we are committed to move to the next issue precisely at 4 o'clock because we have some people who've specifically scheduled to listen in. So regardless of the state of play, I'm going to stop discussion on this at 4 o'clock. Laurence?
I agree with Wego that there is no principle. I don't read paragraph 84 as being a principle. I was, at the time of IAC, I was a staff person. I attended the board discussions. Paragraph 83 was a compromise. So it's a rule. It's a compromise. There is no principle in that standard. That being said, it says high-quality corporate bonds or, if no deep market, government bonds. So we might be solving high-quality corporate bonds with a guidance. Now the problem is government bonds. What do you do when you have no high-quality government bonds? And I come to your plan B. My suggestion would be if effectively the idea was to discount those liabilities with some high-quality yield, whether it's corporate bonds or government bonds, that if you have neither of those, then you go and search for the highest quality, whether it's corporate bonds or government bonds, and you try to search for the higher one. So say that you only have junk government bonds, but you may have higher quality corporate bonds, then I would go for those higher quality corporate bonds rather than constructing a synthetic rate with obviously appropriate disclosure to say that you have not been able to determine high quality corporate bonds or finding high quality government bonds, so that you had to search for whatever evidence you could get of the higher quality you could get. That's a suggestion.
Thank you. Scott?
Just trying to think how we might move the ball forward a little bit. It's the government issue is causing us more problems than it's worth, I suspect. If we believe that minimal or very low credit risk is meaningful in the corporate bond area, perhaps it's also meaningful in the government bond area. That is, if there's not a deep market in corporate bonds with minimal or very low credit risk, look to government bonds so long as they have minimal or very low credit risk. And if they don't, well, you know, you're in a really bad position and we don't have a lot of guidance for you.
What's your plan B?
Well, it's a little bit better than we have now. Right now we're worried about people going to the government rate, even if it does reflect a high credit risk. We can at least guide them to not blindly use the government rate, and Laurence may be right. Go to the highest quality thing you can find. If you can't find it amongst corporate or governments, that may be the way to go. If we start consulting actuaries who are very smart people and way smarter than me on this kind of stuff, it's going to be a long time before we can come up with anything remotely helpful. And my sense is help is needed sooner rather than later.
Peggy?
I would agree. As I said, I'm really not sure how to proceed, you know, expeditiously, but it's something that impacts, you know, trillions of dollars in pension liabilities, really. And it's not just the principle, but it's also how it's applied, because after the financial crises, companies were coming up with all kinds of strategies for throwing out the top 5% and throwing out the bottom 40%. And there was a whole host of ways people were applying, looking at, you know, AA and AAA bonds and how they would come up with their rate. And so I think it's not as simple as just coming up with the principle, but also perhaps giving a little bit of application, giving a little bit of perspective on how you would apply it in reality, in practice. So otherwise, people will fool around with it.
Okay. I've heard two suggestions. One is what I would call the Laurence and Scott expedient. The other is to say that we believe this cannot be addressed except in the context of the broader board project. The third is, I think the staff does need to give some consideration to the consistency of assumptions, which is another requirement of IAS 19, and to think about the circumstances in which a government bond rate that might be low quality because of inflation is in fact consistent with the underlying salary progression assumption, in which case the two would tend to cancel one another out. Out of all of that, the staff will come back at either the next or the one after meeting with a plan B, which might include stop. And we'll try and see. I think if we're going to do anything, we need to get it done in a